This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
My name is Andrea Nandoskar with Green Earth Media. Green Earth Media would like to invite you to join us for the Oahu premiere of Fuel the Movie. Fuel is the winner of the Sundance Film Festival's Audience Award for Best Documentary in 2008 and received 11 standing ovations at Sundance. Woody Harrelson calls Fuel the most hopeful film of the year. The film features an all-star cast and interviews with leading voices ranging from our nation's leaders to Hollywood celebrities, including Julia Roberts, Woody Harrelson, President Jimmy Carter, Willie Nelson, and Sheryl Crow. Oscar contender Fuel is an insightful portrait of America's addiction to oil and an uplifting testament to the immediacy of new energy solutions. Our special guest for the premiere is Fuel director Josh Tickell, who recently appeared on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno. Green Earth Media is proud to bring Fuel to Oahu. In line with the film's message, we are working hard to make the entire event as sustainable as possible by encouraging carpooling and public transport to the premiere, printing a green program guide featuring local green businesses on recycled paper, and hosting sustainable vendors from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. Folks are also encouraged to bring their old phone books and glossy magazines, as Hagedorn Printing will be accepting these items to recycle at the event. The premiere is set for Friday, June 26th at 6:30 p.m. at the Neil S. Blaisdell Concert Hall. It's $10 admission. Tickets are available at the Blaisdell box office, online at Ticketmaster.com, or charged by phone 1-800-745-3000. There is only one screening, and all seats are reserved. Tickets are selling fast. Get your tickets now. Mahalo to our sponsors: Blue Planet Foundation, Kona Brewing Company, Town, Styrophobia, Hawaiian Electric Company, Hagedorn Printing, Whole Foods, Kokua Hawaii Foundation, Trees, and Clothing for Health. Join us on June 26th and meet director Josh Tickell. See you there. For more information on this and other events, visit Green Earth Media at www.gemhawaii.com.
And welcome to another edition of the Carol Cox Show. We're this Sunday, the last day of May 2009. Tomorrow's a brand new month. And we have Carol in the studio, so let's get to it. Here's Carol Cox.
Hey, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
Good morning. Nothing but...
Somebody switched mics on.
Yeah, you are. We got the Houdini and the... But, hey, things happen sometimes, don't they? Hey,
okay, there we go.
I want to thank everybody for joining me today, and I'm looking out here. I got a view that's just spectacular. Clouds towering over the... just... the Apollo, and it's absolutely stunning. Anyway, you folks have heard me talk about the different issues and all, and then I've tried to get you interested in the Hawaii fishing news, because I believe that as they their mantra is the voice of the Hawaii's fishermen, and that is true. But I also have come to appreciate the Hawaii fishing news for it's many issues, whether it be if you are an animal rights activist, if you are a fisherman, if you're a hunter. This is the crossroads. This is where things get to meet and the stories be told. And you can go away learning quite a bit. And on that note, I have asked one of many writers for the Hawaii Fishing News, who frequently appear, or routinely, or regularly, however you want to describe it, to come on the show and share with us some of their stories and what do they do? And, you know, if the fish are biting, if issues are affecting the resources and all of those, new legislation, bad legislation, good legislation, whatever. So anyway, just as a note, if you are interested in acquiring the Hawaii Fishing News, you can pick them up in many outlets, Safeway and McCully Bikes, and many, many stores. So go out and grab yourself one, and we're going to give you a little tidbit story this week that is featured in this month's issue. And I have Mr. Bob Doerr, who resides on the Big Island, and he writes the column Splash. Bob, good morning. How are you?
Hey, Carol. I'm doing very well.
Well, how's the weather over there?
It's hot, boggy, and flat. The oceans, you know, Carol, you know, I moved to Hawaii with my family in 85, and back then trades were predictable. I mean, every day, 10 o'clock, you had trades till about 4 o'clock. And Hilo would have one day a year that would be as flat as Kona. And maybe we were lucky to get that. Now we have week after week of it. And so, you know, there's something happening with the climate. What it is, we don't know. On our island, it's the volcano. You guys are seeing some of that over on Oahu, of how big an impact the volcano and Vog can have. And so that's what it is. It's nice and flat in Hilo.
And we're still in paradise. We could be living in L.A.
Oh, that's absolutely right.
So. My worst day in Hawaii is better than my best day in Los Angeles.
Well, you know, we went fishing on a friend of mine and I went fishing on Thursday, and the problem is nice weather is bad fishing.
Right.
And so that's, you know, we had a great boat ride. You know, we want to see some action with the trades, because what happens is it turns the water up and oxygenates that top layer of the water.
Right.
And then what we've been finding, what scientists have been finding out over the last few years, is that with the hot weather, we're getting more algae blooms.
Mm-hmm.
And so algae blooms, you know, your listeners might be aware that algae blooms have happened at the mouth of the Mississippi and also off of Florida, but they happen on a regular basis in Hawaii. And what happens with an algae bloom is algae will fill the top column of the water, 100, 100, 150 feet, 100 feet, and it sucks the oxygen. There's so much plant life, plankton life there. It sucks the oxygen out, and it makes it very difficult for other sea animals to come up through it.
Mm-hmm.
So this is something, you know, science, this is one of the things Hawaii Fishing News covers and I cover, which is the science of what's going on in the ocean.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, so many species competing, and when you disrupt the natural state, I don't know what, here in Hawaii, we're still growing. The islands are still developing, so I don't know what to attribute personally. If I would say global warming or the warming by the volcano and the introduction of the Vog into the air and atmosphere, and clearly it's all landing in the ocean. So we never know, huh? But I think man has some part in it.
Man has some part in it, but it's, I think, Carol, it's one of the big problems that we have with conservation management and resource management in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
And what we have now is that man, the government agencies and the non-government agencies, the NGOs, you know, look at that man is the problem. Too many people, get people off the land, get people off the water. So this is really the background of why when a government agency is looking to come in and establish an MPA, a marine protected area, they, like the Northwest Hawaiian Islands, you know, they want no people there except government people.
Right.
And, you know, so this is, it's a little naive to think that cars, though they are important, and though pollution from man-made objects are important, the volcano on the Big Island is the biggest polluter by far in the United States.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I had a conversation with an astrophysicist who happened to be in Kona, you know, last year. And he laughed at it. He said, "We laugh at this. It because Mars is heating up the same time the Earth is heating up. The most powerful force for climate change is not your automobile. It's the sun."
Mm-hmm.
And so, understanding those patterns, you know, we had a very unusual sun pattern issue where there's been no sunspots since last fall. Now, what this means, they debate. But the fact is, it's highly unusual.
Mm-hmm.
And so these things, I mean, most fishermen, and clearly, you know, indigenous Polynesian fishermen, Hawaiians, the Micronesians, you know, the people from Kiribati, you know, the relationship between the land and the water and the higher powers, the moon, the sun, and those things greater than us, those are very powerful forces that dictate when you fish, how you fish, when you plant, when you harvest.
Right.
Yeah. So this is really what the battle is for resource management in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
You know, will people have the ability to go back and really revere the Ahupua'a, the land and the ocean? And are there kapunas who can, you know, oversee the conservation? And what we're seeing now, and Carol, you see it on a regular basis. The government regime is saying the average person doesn't belong on the water. We need they're a detriment to fish and water, to land. We need to take large parcels, fence it off, kill the animals in it, have large parcels of water, fence it off, and let nobody in it. And this is something that is, you know, clearly not what the traditional conservation practice in Hawaii has been.
Right. Well, what I wanted to do is talk on some specific topics. And this issue, this month's issue of Fishing News, you wrote about super cavitation bubble and the history of underwater need for speed and just some of the subtitles. And how is a giant bubble formed? And I really wanted to talk to you about that as well, and that's a pretty good lead-in to it. And that one thing I would add, for me, to try and share with people, there's this great discussion about global warming, if it exists, does it not exist. I don't have the mental capacity to wrap my brain around it and understand it all, because the facts are not there, and what is occurring naturally and what is occurring by man. But what I can say, so those that have this great debate and can't seem to digest any or accept any part of it, is take our actions as simple human beings. While we don't know if global warming is a myth or fiction or fact, what we can say is that if we site a dump, or if we dump sewage water into a stream,
yes,
that changes the complexity and reduces,
yes,
the stream into a cesspool,
mm-hmm,
and nothing lives in it. So
right.
While I don't know about global warming, I do know that there are many instances where man can get off of his hind quarters and stand up and say, I acknowledge some responsibility.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and
yeah.
that is, and in your articles, I've noticed over the past years, 2 years, 3 years that I've been reading you, longer actually, you bring out a lot of these points, so I want to really talk about the many subjects that you've written about, and tell us about, if you would, the super cavitation bubble, and that how you and others believe that it relates. And I too suspect that there's some direct relationship between this super cavitation bubble and government activity, and explain, if you would, what it involves.
Okay, Carol, okay, so, you know, what we have to back up into not this month's splash, where we talk about the super cavitation, mm-hmm, but the previous month. So back in April, I wrote about a story that I picked up back in February. In February, there was a fish kill, mm-hmm, on Niihau. And the fish killed a number of reef fish, But there was also a dead humpback whale and a calf were discovered on June 21. Mm-hmm. And so this was washed up in Keakaha, Kauai's Pacific Missile Range facility. There was also a mass kill of squid and lanternfish, and that was discovered at Kauai's Kalapaki Bay on January 20th. So what we have here is we have a shallow water reef fish kill. We have squid and lanternfish, which are normally, you know, deep dwelling creatures, but they do come in, up into the upper water column in the night. So, but we're having a reef and we're having offshore, and then we have a humpback whale and a calf washed up on shore. Now, these all may be unrelated events, but what happens is then people start saying, hey, wait a minute. Fish and Wildlife happen to be on Niihau, and they're poisoning rats on a small offshore island called Lehua.
Mm-hmm.
So that becomes the first, you know, point of was the Roten side, Diphenosone, the cause of this fish kill. Well, what happens is that a woman by the name of Joan Conroe, who writes for the Hawaii Independent, picked up on this, and then she started fleshing it out, and she got a hold of Chris Swenson. Mm-hmm. And Chris was the Coastal Program Administrator for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. He was poisoning the rats on Lehua. Chris says, from U.S. Wildlife, says, hey, wait a minute. You know, we were monitoring this. It was not leaking into the water. And we, by the way, had to leave our little islet four or five times between January 3 and 21 to accommodate DARPA. Mm-hmm. Now, what's DARPA? DARPA is a government weapons testing agency. It's a top secret agency, and according to the mission statement on the website, DARPA has been the place for people with ideas too crazy, too far out, and too risky for most research organizations. Mm-hmm. DARPA is an organization willing to take a risk on an idea long before it's proven. DARPA stands for the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency. So what happens is that now DARPA is taking control of the waters off Niihau while this is happening. And people are saying, okay, well DARPA obviously is not sending a press release.
Right, they don't do that.
Yeah, right. DARPA is not sending a press release. And so what we're seeing is that, but what we do in the puzzle is that a number of the fish, we had a biologist, Theri Work, the federal wildlife biologist who conducted the necropsy on one fish, found that it had an acute inflammation of the swelling of the gills. Could be caused by a number of factors. But a number of fish had distended fish bladders, and normally the bladder loses the ability to compensate buoyancy for whatever reason. One of those is, you know, sonar testing and underwater explosions could distend fish bladders.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what happens is we've seen what happens is the sound impact is so intense it essentially just ruptures eardrums and fish bladders.
Right,
but none of this is an exact science because the people who most know are likely the people least likely to tell you. But what we do know is that gets us over to what could DARPA be doing up in Niihau, and what would one of the possibilities be? And one of the possibilities would be that. There would be that a bubble cavitation experiment,
right.
And what basically happens is, you know, the Russians were the first credited to taking a submarine back in 1969. It was called Papa. It had titanium hull, and a pair of pressurized nuclear water reactors. It had an announced speed of 44 knots underwater and was the fastest underwater vehicle. And what they were looking to do is, they then started talking in 88 about in the near future they would have submarines that would go 50 to 60 knots
underwater.
And so what this is it's based on a concept of supercavitation, and what it involves, surrounding the object with a bubble of gas that allows it to travel at high speeds by reducing contact with the surrounding water, and hence the drag.
Right.
So what happens is basically what you have is that, so they have torpedoes that go supercavitation, and that might be a little simpler, device to look at. You basically take a rocket engine, and you take the blast coming off of the rocket engine, and divert it to the front of the torpedo. And so what happens is that when it's in the front, you're pushing a bubble, and you're not going through water. You have a what happens is you get supercavitation.
Mm-hmm.
And what we know, so cavitation, you know, every boat that has a propeller has cavitation.
Mm-hmm.
And what the cavitation is, as the propeller turns, it creates a little air pocket off the bubble. And now you say, well, you know, well, what can an air pocket, what can cavitation do? Well, most boaters will see, like, you know, my prop is 8 years old, 9 years old. I've got cavitation, and what happens? It ends up pitting the prop.
Right.
It can drop efficiency. It can pit it. So this is something that this is one possibility for DARPA. This is one possibility of what they were speculating is that the little islet off of Niihau had had an elevation that would allow them at night to look at this supercavitation experiment, because what would be very easy to see is the light from the rocket engine in the water.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, this is speculation, Carol. But what we do know is that we know that there's a whole range, and you see this in your work with the chemical dumping on the reefs on Waianae and off of Pearl and actually throughout the state. Is that the government agencies? The government agencies, especially in the secret work, are above all environmental regulations and above all environmental care and concern, and maybe rightly so, for the higher duty and the protection of the nation and the free world. But it remains to be seen that what happens is when you took the Northwest Hawaiian Islands away from the county of Honolulu, county of Honolulu was in charge of conserving and protecting the Northwest Hawaiian Islands. That was a part of its ahupua'a. When environmentalist groups came in and ultimately President Bush came in and made it a national marine monument, what happened is it became the largest secret weapon, underwater and water secret weapons testing area in the world. And it was only superseded when the Marianas became the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you look at the details of what the monument is, everyone thinks, oh, God, we're saving fish. Monk seals will be better. You know, the terns, albatross, sharks, alua, everything's going to be much better up there. But what we really see when we look at the details is that the government agencies have full right and control, and no government agency can bring harm upon another agency for doing damage in that monument.
Right.
You know, so what you have is a pass. You have a free pass. Now, what's really going on with the free pass? You know, because what we're seeing is, you know, in many things, and this has been a big gripe of myself, Splash Fishing News, of fishermen are blamed for the decline of the marine ecosystem in Hawaii. you take a look at any NGO or environmental agency who's looking to close large areas of water down, and they're going to say it's overfished. Mm-hmm. We need to get people out. And so what ends up happening is, you know, when you look at the impact, they never talk about, you know, the developments. They never talk about the chemicals going into the stream, like the stories that you cover. They never talk about every time a car is on a highway, it's losing a small amount of rubber, and that rubber is going into the land and washing into the ocean. They don't talk about, you know, the hundreds of metric tons of nerve and chemical weapons that were dumped offshore throughout the Hawaiian Islands and the Pacific. Never talk about it. And we never talk about what the effects of above ground hydrogen bomb and nuclear testing were in the Pacific. It's like immaterial. You know what it is it's our vehicles and it's our wasteful lives that's the problem. Mm-hmm. We're seeing you and I both know is that it's the large, and certainly we all have to be, you know, efficient and why be wasteful.
Now, Bob, you know, I'm backing up one bit. I think at the supercavitation bubble, I want to focus maybe another minute or so on that.
Sure.
Just to be clear, this gas or the exhaust or the sound or the sound waves that have been emitted from this could be suspect in killing the fish or attributing to their death. Attributing that to their death, but they were somewhere in here, and I've read many, and in your report and others, that the Fish and Wildlife Service was told not to be on or recommended.
Correct. They were kicked off the island.
They were kicked off the island. Was it Lehua? They were kicked off.
Yes.
And by DARPA to say that they didn't want them there.
Yes.
Okay, and so that could mean many things. That one, they didn't want anybody to witness.
Correct.
Occurring, or possibly this torpedo that travels so fast, because underwater you don't have the accuracy.
Carol.
It's in its developmental stages,
right.
So you don't have accuracy, and that it could be a wayward or a mis aim.
Yes, absolutely.
And so clearly, we don't have the facts before us because they don't release them. But we can conclude ourselves or deduce that. Either they were concerned with a stray torpedo or something of that nature that was going on.
Exactly. They didn't want it witnessed, or it was a developmental project that could go awry.
Right, and you having what inclines or layers of cold water, hot water, depending on the wave action, and could have caused that torpedo traveling at that, just a minor deflection, right?
Yes.
So what then... Has the National Marine Fisheries Service conducted an extensive investigation of what happened? It seemed it played up in the news quite a bit, and then it just went away. What did any federal agency other than Fish and Wildlife Service look at it? But I was told that Fish and Wildlife Service handed it off to the state DLNR in the ultimate decision or follow-up.
Well, and you know, Carol, you know how DLNR works, as well as we all do, and we know how the state of Hawaii works. And a good example of that is the frigate that was on the reef off of Honolulu Airport for, what was it, 2 weeks. Now, we know that when there were two small... diving boats. One went off of Molokini, and you know it sank.
Mm-hmm.
The boat sank. People had to be rescued, and the boat dragged on the bottom.
Right.
And that fine for coral damage came out to about $500,000.
Right.
And that operator had to pay for office time for DLNR.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was another one at Kaanapali. You know, similar, maybe a little bit more, you know, derelict in how they went about it. They didn't have a mooring, and they kept it moored on coral, and it dragged. But a similar impact. Coral's killed, and now DLNR builds for, you know, sues them, bring office time, and then also $500,000. Now, You know, I got a hold of DLNR and said, hey, well, what's going to happen here? You know, you've established precedent that you bring people to court and you fine them. And this would have been, you know, the frigate off of Honolulu if you extrapolated what the dive boats, these dive boats were 39 feet or so and did damage, but clearly not as much damage as the frigate. What ended up happening was, you know, divers are out there, teams, Navy divers and local contractors come together, start gluing coral on, and it's going to get, and it'll be a done deal.
Mm-hmm.
But the precedent is, if you sue citizens and you charge for office time and you're getting $1,000 a coral head, you know, why is the government any different?
Right, well, it's something that's popping up. We see it repeating itself wherever the government is involved or failing. And those out there that go, well, they have a right to develop weapons. That's fine. But they don't have a right to just destroy things and create an imbalance in justice where you skewer or massacre a citizen. But when it comes to government, who's doing a greater impact of negativity, and you walk away and you cover up for them.
Well, no, Carol, what you've got, because the biggest issue with the marine environment in the Pacific is this. And for, you know, for a short time, if you and I were, you know, Navy admirals and we're talking on the red phone, and this is no one's hearing us. What a big concern of ours would be is, oh, by the way, China has said, U.S., get your Navy out of the Western Pacific. We no longer need you here. We want you to leave. We're fine with taking control of all of the critical areas in the Western Pacific. At the same time, we know is that China is building up its Navy at a massive clip, and that it's supplying some of its technology to other states, like with the supercavitation torpedo that China has one. Russia sold one to China, and then Iran, you know, tested one of those. So evidently got with China, and so now Iran has. So Iran has submarines, China has submarines, as well as Pakistan has submarines. And, you know, there was a thing in the advertiser that the world submarine fleet's about 180, while the U.S. submarine fleet was about 30.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so this is one of the reasons why that the U.S. made a claim that this, you know, we cover this in Splash. These are some of the things we cover in Fishing News. The U.S. made a claim that from the Aleutians to Guam is now a exclusive U.S. marine zone. And so essentially a line has been drawn in the sand saying, hey, you know what, all nations out there, take heed. The U.S. Navy is not going to be thrown out of the Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
And now what we've seen in the last few months is we had a couple of issues end of last year, and what we know is that a typhoon was coming, and a U.S. naval ship asked for safe harbor out of the typhoon's way in China and was refused. The second incident was that a U.S. naval aircraft carrier wanted to have berth. You know, was having R&R, had it planned, was ready to berth, and then at the final minute was told, you know, oh, by the way, you can't come here. Then we see this year is that, you know, was a submarine surveillance ship off of one of the offshore islands in China was doing some surveillance and was surrounded by fishing vessels. And was basically surrounded and harassed by fishing vessels acting in a coordinated, you know, government way. We're starting to see, so what we're seeing is a rewriting of maritime law. And what most people don't know is that, you know, land law is different than maritime law. They had their own traditions, and the traditions of people of the sea are different than people of the of the of the land.
Yeah. So, and, Bob, hold on 1 minute. We're going to take a break. I got a real commitment here, so hold on.
Okay, you? Right on.
All right, man. Let me tell them. Oh no, I don't.
Aloha. My name is Andrea Nandoskar with Green Earth Media. Green Earth Media would like to invite you to join us for the Oahu premiere of Fuel the Movie. Fuel is the winner of the Sundance Film Festival's Audience Award for Best Documentary in 2008 and received 11 standing ovations at Sundance. Woody Harrelson calls Fuel the most hopeful film of the year. The film features an all-star cast and interviews with leading voices ranging from our nation's leaders to Hollywood celebrities, including Julia Roberts, Woody Harrelson, President Jimmy Carter, Willie Nelson, and Sheryl Crow. Oscar contender Fuel is an insightful portrait of America's addiction to oil and an uplifting testament to the immediacy of new energy solutions. Our special guest for the premiere is Fuel director Josh Tickell, who recently appeared on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno. Green Earth Media is proud to bring Fuel to Oahu. In line with the film's message, we are working hard to make the entire event as sustainable as possible by encouraging carpooling and public transport to the premiere, printing a green program guide featuring local green businesses on recycled paper, and hosting sustainable vendors from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. Folks are also encouraged to bring their old phone books and glossy magazines, as Hagedorn Printing will be accepting these items to recycle at the event. The premiere is set for Friday, June 26th at 6:30 p.m. at the Neil S. Blaisdell Concert Hall. It's $10 admission. Tickets are available at the Blaisdell box office, online at Ticketmaster.com, or charge by phone 1-800-745-3000. There is only one screening, and all seats are reserved. Tickets are selling fast. Get your tickets now. Mahalo to our sponsors: Blue Planet Foundation, Kona Brewing Company, Town, Styrophobia, Hawaiian Electric Company, Hagedorn Printing, Whole Foods, Kokua Hawaii Foundation, Trees, and Clothing for Health. Join us on June 26th and meet director Josh Tickell. See you there. For more information on this and other events, visit Green Earth Media at www.gemhawaii.com.
All righty. Welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. We're here talking with Bob Doerr, who resides on the Big Island and writes the column Splash in the Hawaii Fishing News. And if you got a story or storyline and you want to have contact with Fishing News, you can call them at 808-395-4499 or email them at fishnews, F-I-S-H-N-E-W-S, at hawaii.rr.com. And send them an email or give them a call, and they're always willing to hear a fish story or issue such as this as Bob is talking about. And Bob, way back, and what I wanted to do is also talk about, get more specific in some of the issues locally here, and that is a rather eye-opener when you talk about the laying claim to the sanctuaries. And I see the strategy, and it's designed now to keep all state agencies hands off.
You know, Carol, you see it. There's a big, you know, who's got money out there, and it's the federal government, and it doesn't hurt them that they can just go to the printing presses and print whatever they want.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, the bottom line here, Carol, because a lot of these are big issues and they're complicated, and you've got to be following for a long time. And the big issue is that everyone in Hawaii is a citizen of Hawaii, and our Constitution guarantees us the ability to enjoy, to protect, and preserve our resources. And this is the traditional conservation ethic of the Ahupua'a. You know, you have the right to appreciate, but also conserve, to not pollute, to pick up, to make it better. this is something that every citizen, every fisherman, and every hunter, and over the years, the hunters and the fishermen that I see, there's hundreds of them, mm-hmm. all know this and appreciate it. And so this is something that people can really support, join clubs, talk to your Ohana, go fishing, go to the beach. You know, every day you can make it better.
Right.
And then, Carol, I know you wanted to talk a little bit about what some of the issues on the Big Island.
Yeah, we're going to have about 15 minutes, so.
All right, we can pick it up a little bit. And one's aerial shooting. And do you know about the aerial shooting controversy?
Oh, yeah. For years have been mouflon hunting, goat, and so forth.
So this is ongoing. It's a battle, and when you really shake it out, there was a letter in the editor to the editor today's Hawaii Tribune Herald, and the hunter basically said, "Listen, okay, now you're aerial shooting, but a number of these shots are not going to be clean kills, and some of these shots are going to be gut shots, and now you've got young animals coming to mothers who want to nurse." And now you've got a two-for-one kill with a badly placed bullet. And animals don't deserve this. This is, when you shake this aerial shooting out, it's an inhumane way to take care of an animal problem.
So what are you seeing as a solution to this?
I think there's been an alienation between hunters and state agencies, and I think one way is to get closer to the hunters and the state agencies, and one way would be to trap. One way would be to say, listen, what is the humane way and what is the inhumane way.
Mm-hmm.
And the inhumane way happens to be cheaper than the humane way, and it's the same thing with using snares to snare pigs in the wild.
Mm-hmm.
Animals deserve more than this, and I think this is part of the culture of the people who are on the land and appreciate it.
Now, some of the listeners out there are going, okay, I get it, but I don't get it. You're saying that it's. You don't think it's okay to shoot them from the helicopter because it's not accurate, but do shoot them. Allow the hunters. I'm trying to make the connection.
That's right. The native peoples. It's the difference. This is no different than when the buffalo on the plains was just slaughtered and left to, and piled and left to heap.
But now, you are not going away and suggesting that there is no need to eradicate or monitor. I'm trying to get the
court standings are in place.
Okay.
I mean, I've worked with John Carroll. Court standings are in place.
John Carroll, the lawyer?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I was.
Yeah, John Carroll, and he mounted a very good effort to go to. To go to the Ninth Court of Appeals, and the court ruling is there, and it's very clear.
Mm-hmm. So they should not. So the issue would be not allowing them to be shot from air, but allow the hunter. So that gets into a different subject. A bigger problem is if you then managing the game for hunting, which would be kind of inconsistent with the court order.
No, you're not managing. If you have a conservation, right now you have an eradication problem.
Right.
Versus a conservation problem. If the conservation problem is we have animals that need to be taken out, what is the way to do this?
Right.
What is the way to do this? No animal has the right to have to suffer needlessly in the forest or in the water,
uh-huh.
because it's cheaper for a government agency to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Period.
Yeah. Well,
Carol, and these non-government organizations have hundreds of millions of dollars. If they're so hip on taking animals off the mountain, how about being hip to being humane and doing it?
Mm-hmm.
I know of no hunter who looks to kill an animal without a clean and ethical kill.
Well, it's illegal to hunt from helicopters or aircraft using it. And
yeah.
If you were to go to Alaska, you'd have to land, and certain rules require you to wait so many hours. You can't even use, you know. But
yeah. So I mean, so this is one issue that's ongoing. Yeah. The other issue is the Po'o'iki boat ramp. The Po'o'iki boat ramp is in Lower Puna.
Okay.
It's probably, I'd say, Carol, it's probably the most dangerous boat ramp in America.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly top five, clearly top ten. And what you have is, it's massive problems. Kids swimming in the boat ramp, large south swells closing out the bay, rocky, slippery, not easy to get boats out. So, what happened there was the fishermen had met with, the government agency, DLNR, to kind of figure out how to make this thing go down right. And the bottom line was is that it came, the bottom shake on it was the fishermen go, okay, we talked for 3 years, and now we got a boat ramp that came out of an engineering office in Honolulu. It has, for a number of issues there, people in offices are not really relating to what's going down in the field. And so they've got a new boat ramp. It works. Did it make it any safer? No. Did it make it easier on boats? Was it well constructed?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Mm-hmm.
And so, that's kind of... and here again, Carol, here's the theme again. We know we're from the government, and we're here to help you.
Right.
You know, this is top-down. That citizens know best. Po'o'iki was the number one ahi landing, port for local artisanal fishermen, not for longliners, in the state of Hawaii. There's guys there and who have generations of knowledge. To be so presumptuous that you know what they need, this is something. You have a new boat ramp. Could it have been better at Po'o'iki? Yes. The other thing that's happening is Kapaloa Landing, and this is a citizen group, surfers, fishermen, and then local businessmen who appreciate the water. And it's a little landing area right as you come into Hilo. And what it was is this is the place where Kamehameha came and had the law of the splintered paddle, which essentially was, Kamehameha. Someone did the king wrong, and so-called did the king wrong, and then what happened is the king got his foot caught in a crack, and a paddle, one of the locals, came and just whacked them because the king was being ignorant. And so this evidently is where this happened. This is a lot that's likely about 4,000 square feet.
We're getting down in time, so make it.
Carol, what do you want to talk? HIBT has come up. It's the 50th anniversary.
Uh-huh.
Peter Fithian is going to have an all-time cast, about 50 boats from around the world. I'll be fishing with that with my normal Force Marine cohort.
Mm-hmm.
Peter Fithian came to Kona in the 50s.
Right.
He was the guy who was with Bobby Jones when they took the Masters into the limelight, the golf tournament.
Right.
Yeah, so that's always a lot of fun, and it brings a lot of fishermen and scientists from around the world on that.
So you're coming over here, and part of the article you were talking about the shark tours, and real quickly,
yes.
you planning a trip over here. I wonder if, because some of the listeners out there, I'd like to be fair, and are you available on another occasion when you do come and coordinate? Because there are some things I'm sure they're going to ask me that they can get a discussion about, and I would like to have a healthy discussion. And some of the things you write about in here really reveals some behind the scenes and activities that are going on, such as as we talk quite often, you raise one issue, nonprofits being involved and they seem to have taken over government as we know it here in the DLNR. And so I don't want people to think that you're just all talk. There is substantial. In fact, right now there's a proposal going around the Castle Foundation is going to fund a study for accreditation, but the money is going through the Nature Conservancy.
Right.
Now, this is information provided to me by DLNR workers. And so why would the government, DLNR, want to accept money from the Castle? Now, I don't have any documentation, but I'm told if you went to the Castle Foundation website, you could see that. And they're seeking, they're going to send nine men from the state DLNR to seek accreditation.
Right.
So what you're saying about the nonprofits seems is of great concern.
Yeah. No. This is an ongoing pattern.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But when are you planning on coming over?
It's a good question. If the fishing's good, never.
Well, okay. Well.
But the North Shore Shark Adventures. Yeah, I had an interesting proposition, which was, hey, listen, we're doing shark research out here. We're not attracting big tigers to, you know, that harm people. And Dr. Carl Meyer, you know, one of the top shark guys in the state, loves us because we're seeing animals up close. Mm-hmm. So, Carol, when do you want me to come over?
Well, I'll schedule it. I'll send out an email.
And we'll figure it out. That'd be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it'd be fun to bang it around. I'd love to hear, you know, some of the concerns of your listeners.
Yeah.
You know, Cayena Point, does the Waikiki Conservation District work for shutting off fish? What works and what doesn't work and what can work better?
Yeah, I would. I'm going to right now say extend an invite to some of the people in the community, nonprofits or animal rights or whomever, to call in, and we'll get together and set up a conversation with Bob, and his points are quite interesting, and some of them are simply reflecting what is going on behind government doors.
Yeah.
So anyway, Bob, thank you. We're down to the last minute.
Carol, it's been fun. And enjoy your news reports. Enjoy your environmental watch, and keep up the good work.
We're going to follow up with this. I want to talk with you more off air on cavitation. I'll call you because that
it's
is
interesting.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Well.
Okay.
Thank you, brother.
Okay. Aloha.
Aloha. Okay, thank you for joining me here with the Carol Cox Show, and Bob Doerr was my guest from Hawaii Fishing News, Splash. So please, you out there, give us a call. And if the animal rights activists or animal rights community or nonprofits or organization and environment, we'd like to get with you and invite your opinions and your comments. You can call me at 524-1080 or reach me at carol@carolcox.com. Aloha. She touched by me in painted on jeans. And don't have time, cause she was the green. In the blink of an eye, I knew her number and her name. Yeah.
1080 on the AM dial.